Welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about strip till. We are also going to get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag and got a few other topics to cover today as well. If you'd like to call in and talk about anything going on your farm or talk about our topic, strip till, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today. I just want to let you know, next week we've got a couple of events we're going to be at. First of all, on Monday, I'm going to be in Brinkley, Arkansas, along with our AgPhD research lead, Glenn Herz, doing an AgPhD workshop called 101 Ways to Cut Expenses on the Farm. Darren and I are going to be at Commodity Classic on Thursday and Friday.
Got to think about that. You got a busy schedule coming up.
I'm like, okay, what else? Yeah, I know. I got some other stuff going on in the middle of the week, in the middle of the country as well. But anyway, on Thursday and Friday, Darren and I are going to be at Commodity Classic.
In other words, what you're saying is it could be an interesting week coming up for you, especially if we get some more weather coming through.
Yeah, I'm praying for good weather. Anyway, we will be at Commodity Classic speaking both on Thursday and Friday. Love to see you there. All right, so with our topic strip till today, I just want to give you a little background on our own farm. So you kind of know what we have done in the past, just to open things up. We started doing some strip till roughly 25 years ago. So I was a young agronomist and farmer, and basically the Farm Service Agency said we had to have a certain percentage of residue left at the end of each season, basically through the winter and everything year round. We had to have a certain percentage of cover on some of our highly erodible land. So for our dad, he said, well, I guess we don't have a whole lot of choice here. We're going to have to go no-till on some stuff. He wasn't real big on it. He had come from Iowa years ago, and back there, when he was farming there, everything was full-scale tillage, and he just really liked full-scale tillage because, number one, you saw what you got done when you were out working in the fall, and you kill a lot of insects and diseases and weeds by doing tillage, so, and also make a fairly nice seedbed. So he really liked conventional tillage. But anyway, we went no-till, and we did this on almost half the farm. We did that for about 10 years on that half of the farm, and there were obviously huge benefits to that. Not all the things were benefits, though. The two challenges we had in doing no-till for about 10 years were, number one, we had most of our nutrients in the top couple inches by the time we got done with that 10 years. We had nutrient stratification. When you think about the immobile nutrients in soil, and also I would just say we have medium to heavy soils, we have very little rainfall, and we have cold weather conditions, which means we don't get a lot of nutrient movement in soil. Even with things that people say are leachable, like potassium and boron, they're not leachable here. So when you have immobile nutrients that aren't leachable anywhere, like phosphorus, zinc, copper, some others, they're all in the top couple inches of soil. We were either putting some stuff on with a planter, some fertilizer on with a planter, or we were broadcasting fertilizer, and it just simply was not getting in the soil very far. So that was issue number one. Issue number two is we just had very cold soils when we were planting in the spring. Again, it's a lot to do with the area that we farm in South Dakota. It's very cold here. I mean, even next week, I was just looking at the forecast for a week out. It's the 1st of March next week, and they're talking potentially record cold temperatures. The record cold in the entire month of March for Sioux Falls, South Dakota is 14 below zero. We might break that late next week. So this is not a super fun place to live in the wintertime. But because of all that, we have cold soils going into the spring. So we're trying to plant in the spring, and it just wasn't working very well. We weren't getting very good stands. We weren't getting quick emergence. It's just, it was a real challenge in no-till, and we were not able to overcome that challenge very well. So those were our two big issues. We ended up going to strip-till on those no-till acres to solve both of those issues. So what we have done for many years is go out in the fall with strip-till. We're taking a shank or a coulter running deep in the ground, not shallow, but deep in the ground. I prefer 8 to even 10 inches deep where I want to place my fertilizer, because if I look at our top 2 inches, just way loaded up. Our top 6 inches, pretty loaded up. But the next 6 inches, not very loaded up at all. So that's a great place to put your fertilizer. In terms of warming up the soil, we do the tillage in the fall just in the strip. Okay, so now we've got black soil just in the strip in the spring. So we get many of the benefits of no-till in between the rows. But in the row, we've got roughly 7 degrees warmer soil when we go to plant. Well, that's an enormous advantage when you're planting into cold soils. I don't mind planting corn in 40, 45, 48 degree soil temps. I'm just fine with that. And even if we did plant in 50 or 55 degree soil temps, the odds are extremely high when we plant that the soil temp is going to drop well below 50 degrees, which causes a major challenge for corn seed. Well, if I can gain a few degrees by having that strip tilled, that's really nice. Now, in terms of compaction reduction, this is another thing we were kind of challenged with in no-till. We really should have tried to fix our compaction issues before we went into no-till, because we found with no-till, we never solved our compaction issues. Well, one of the nice things I like with strip-till is when we're going clear down to 8 or 10 inches deep with a shank or a coulter, then we've got no compaction all the way down to that depth. It's awesome. So we have roots getting down very, very quickly. They're getting to that fertility that we've got deep. Then the roots are proliferating down there. And what we're finding is in dry years, we are having big gains. And, you know, just in terms of building our soil overall, too, we're not just building our top 6 inches. We're building clear down to 8 or 10 inches and even more. So it does serve some good long-term advantages for us, too. So that's just my little feedback on, or I'm trying to let you know what we've done over the years with strip-till. I do like it. Not that it's the total answer, but it is good. Well, stay tuned. We're going to talk more about strip-till today on Ag PhD Radio.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses 4 specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is strip tillage, but of course we'll tackle any agronomic question you may have at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Get a number of emails from me already here today that we're going to try to get through a little later in the show. And then you can find us on social media as well. We're on Twitter at AgPhD Media. Got Brian with us right now down in Nebraska. Not my brother Brian, but another Brian who farms in Nebraska. How you doing today, Brian?
Very good, very good. A little cold down here, but not too bad.
Yeah, I would say we're catching a pretty good cold spell and a lot of snow here at the tail end of the winter. And, you know, it's going to be a little challenge for guys trying to do stuff in the spring. Are you doing some strip-till, number one? And number two, do you try to do it in the fall or do you like to do it in the spring?
Well, actually, I do 100% strip-till now, and I've implemented a fall pass and a spring pass, and it seems to be working really well in my part of the country here.
That is interesting. Okay, I know, you know, when guests think of Nebraska, they think of corn, and I can only imagine all the corn residue. Is it a residue blowing over the row that's starting to create that need for the spring pass, or is it just to freshen things up, darken them up, and get a quicker start?
It's actually more for my fertilizer placement. I like to come in with my non-leachables in the fall and try to place them as deep as I can, you know, that 6 to 8 inches, so that I can get them available for the next year's crop, and then I come back in the spring and do a freshen up strip, and then put a good base rate of my nitrogen down and any other nutrients that I need for the year. So
very interesting. Okay, so you've been doing the strip till now for a while. Why did you get started in it, and what made you say, "Wow, I got to go 100%"?
Well, residue management was probably my first thing. We were fighting a lot of trash, and then, you know, then we switched to go to the strip till and implementing the nutrient management through it, and it seems like every year it gets better and better, and I'm seeing, you know, my water holding capacity is rising dramatically. It's just all around been a good experience in making my soil a lot healthier.
You know, you mentioned the residue management. Are you doing any continuous corn with the strip till, or are you mainly in rotated ground?
I usually do about a 3 or 4 year rotation. So I usually do 3 or 4 years of corn on corn, and then I'll come back in and put some beans on that fourth year probably.
Okay. Yeah, that's a question we get a lot from other farmers around the country, because we'll do some continuous corn with our strip till as well. What's your experience been with that? You mentioned the residue management was really a big piece of this that you got started. What have been your observations?
You know, early on, you know, it seemed like, you know, that was my main reason, you know, in doing that for the residue management. But as my microbes and everything has become healthier by implementing this, the trash and stuff is starting to break down faster, and I'm not having as much of an issue now, or it's not as a great a concern as it is.
Sure.
To go through, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and on the nutrient management standpoint, I liked what you said about the non-leachables in the fall. We run into the same thing here. If we don't get them out there in the fall, sometimes it's hard for that to break down and be available by spring. And then saving some of those leachables like end for a little bit closer to the season. I like your strategy. What have you thought since you've gone to that deeper placement of P and K? Have you noticed that showing up? We think that we're getting a lot better drought tolerance.
Yes, that's been a real eye-opener for me. I farm about half my acres are dry land and half of them are irrigated, and I'm really noticing it in my dry land acres. And, you know, so placing that deeper, and it's helping on my irrigated. Also, my water consumption has gone down, which is starting to get to be a huge factor in my part of the country. They're talking about them running some allocations. So it's just been a huge benefit for me for my water water holding capacity.
Yeah, you bring up some great points here, Brian, and we'll discuss it just a little bit further as we talk about strip-till on today's show. Really appreciate having you on. Thanks thanks for the call, and we'd love to talk to you again sometime soon.
Okay, thank you.
We're talking strip-till on today's show, and when you think about strip-till, it's interesting. We talk to a lot of farmers that say, okay, I really like liquid fertilizer in my strip-till, and others say, well, I really like dry fertilizer. I think the nutrient placement is one of the key components. We've got Tim Dukert with us right now with AgriLiquid. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You know, the strip tillage is something I know that AgriLiquid looks at quite a bit, too, and did you find that conversation with Brian kind of interesting? He's focusing on certain nutrients he likes to put on the fall, certain nutrients he likes to put on in the spring.
Yeah, I did. It is interesting. You talk to guys that kind of like dry fertilizer and those that like the liquid. We've attempted both with our strip till unit, the dry and the liquid, and we always attempt to do some tests that are spring and fall applied. Like he was saying, we avoid any nitrogen in the fall time, so we have to put that on the springtime here in Michigan with our wetter climate that we have. That's just a given. But, yeah, it's great to see guys doing strip-till. We see lots of benefits to it. And as he was talking of placing those nutrients down lower, and I think you mentioned a little bit of better drought tolerance. We get those roots down to those nutrients, and they like to go and seek those out and kind of hang out in those areas. And if we put that down further, that's where the roots are going to be, and that's going to help us in those droughty times.
Tim, we had a lot of farmers that we've talked to here this winter that did not get any fall fertility work done. And honestly, some guys that tried to do strip-till, like us, for example, who didn't get the strip-till done. So we're going to be out doing some stuff in the spring. What do you recommend in that spring strip-till, fertility-wise, that's going to be available quickly for our crop?
I still like the liquid fertilizer because it is going to be available to that plant this season more. A lot more in quantity than a dry fertilizer putting it down.
What have you seen in your research? Because I know you guys have looked at both in the spring side. Is that where you really see the big difference in performance?
I think that is a portion that helps, is the liquid versus the dry in the springtime, just because it's more soluble. It's going to be available to that root system and to that plant for its use. Yes.
What about the salt issue in the spring? Is that I've always thought on our farm we've tried to use the dries in the fall if we could, and salt being part of the equation.
That's a very good point. A couple of years ago, I had an experiment. We had potash put on at the 8-inch level, and compared to our SureKay and our Calibrate product. At the same level and at different levels as well. And the one thing that was interesting, as you dig up some of those roots, and it really appeared that those roots would avoid that area where that potash was applied. They tend to go around that, and I believe it is because of that salt index that's higher. They don't prefer that kind of area to grow in.
I think you just gave us some homework, Tim, to do a little digging this spring. And that's not just for Brian and me, but for all of our...
If you are going to do that, I say take a Sharpie out and put a line on the side of the plant so you know the orientation to the row before you dig that out.
Ooh,
so you can look at that root system and see how it's growing around the band of fertilizer that you're putting down there.
Very interesting. Hey, I appreciate that, Tim. That's some good hacks there at the end, too, to get better results and keep track of things as you're doing your digging out in the field. Been talking with Tim Dukert with AgriLiquid. Tim, we got to run. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate having you on. We're talking strip-till on today's show. Stay tuned.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is strip tillage, but of course we'll take any agronomic question you have. If you've got something you're thinking about or working on your farm, our phone lines are open all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got our friend Chris Larson with us right now with Case IH. One of the things I love about Chris is that he farms too, and not everything goes perfect on your farm, Chris. So what challenges are you guys facing going into the spring?
Yeah, hi, Darren. Thanks for having me today. I really appreciate that.
You bet.
Obviously, one thing that hasn't gone the best, and we're trying to figure it out yet, is what exactly did we do to our fields last fall? You know, and I think that's probably a big question mark. We know that we probably hit it pretty hard on those wet days, and maybe we shouldn't have, but the crop got out.
Well, so, these soils never dried out last fall, and here we go. We're talking strip tillage today, and I know our farm is included in this discussion of we got to try and do some stuff in the spring. So what are some of those challenges of building the perfect seed bed if you didn't get your tillage done in the fall?
Well, yeah, you know, the strip tillage is a great way to do that, I think. And we strip till as well on our farm. And it has traditionally been in the spring for us. It hasn't been a fall application. So I think if you're looking for that ability to create a seed bed that is also placing fertilizer down and create a one pass operation, this could be your way to get those nutrients down and create a seed bed to really complement seed placement.
You know, I think that's one of the big things that when we talk about strip tillage and farmers everywhere will ask me, what do you like about the strip tillage? And I like that I'm getting multiple things done in one pass. And granted, it takes longer if I'm out there with a strip tiller, and especially if I'm putting on fertilizer versus, hey, I'm going to do full-scale conventional tillage. But I'm getting so many things done. I'm getting the residue management under control. I'm getting my seed bed built, nutrient placement. And, you know, normally like in the fall, we'll end up using a shank for nutrient placement. I talked to a lot of guys that say they're having better luck with coulters if they're out in the spring just because of how wet soils might be if you get down too deep. What other kind of tips like that have you got for us?
Well, I think, when it comes to the spring application, patience does come into play. You can't just go out and just hit it as hard as you can. It has to take some patience. We do use a knife version in the spring and really haven't seen issues with that at all. It's a matter of, again, being patient with it and being able to create the berm that is a little bit flatter, so it is settled out versus humping one up, kind of like you might do in the fall. But trying to create a flat one that has good clod sizing. If you're getting a lot of clods and it's really, really moist, that's not going to be the greatest situation because you're going to have seed to soil contact issues, maybe with seed. But it does take a little bit of a judgment and some detail work to know what you're getting into when you hit it in the spring.
What are you seeing for trends in strip till? Is this a practice that's growing across the country?
Yeah. I think we've been saying it's a trend that we think is going to grow for a lot of years, and it's pretty steady, I'd say, with maybe a slight bit of growth. I know standing on the lot at Case IH, at National Farm Machinery Show, next week at Commodity Classic, we get questions about it all the time. You stand next to our equipment, the NutriTiller 955, and people are asking about it, investigating it. You get one or two guys in a day, I bought one, now I got to figure out what I got to do with it. It's for the detailed farmer, right? It's a farmer that is extremely detailed to the minute levels. And a lot of times, depending on your size, that becomes a little bit more difficult. Not that they don't want to be or aren't, this is a different management style. So I think for the most part, it's steady with a slight bit of growth. But any extreme growth, we'll have to see as we move forward.
One last question for you, Chris. Is there anything new that Case IH is working on or that you're learning now as strip till is becoming a little more popular that's really helping growers do an even better job?
Well, I think teaming up with different air carts that have more section control capabilities, prescription capabilities, like our Precision Air 5 Series carts that have electronic meters, section control down to, two-row control if you're looking at 16-row. I mean, that's really a vital piece. Right there, and even maybe thinking differently about strip till, maybe it just becomes those areas that are highly no-till. You don't want to make a huge disturbance. It's just indexing fertilizer could also be another solution with like our the NutriPlacer 940 with the high-speed, low-disturbance row units that are placing fertilizer at 6 inches, but it's not really creating a huge berm, or not a huge berm, but, five, six-inch-wide berm. It's just indexing. Still looks like a no-till condition. That's something that I think we might see a little bit more of a trend going forward where it's high speeds, high productivity, yet low disturbance.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on there, and it's really fascinating. And I've been talking with Chris Lurson here with Case IH. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. And well, as soon as the snow melts away, I guess we'll find out about all that stuff out in the field that's left there from last fall.
Looking forward to the challenge, Darren. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Thanks. Brian, so many thoughts here, I guess, brought up by our guests we've had on so far. And definitely there's some challenges. If we didn't get the strip till done in the fall, doing it in the spring is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I guess either way, we want to have good soil conditions. So that's the number one concern. And here's what I worry about in our geography. I can't really go out there with a shank very well most springs, and this is the reason why. Because when I'm going out with a shank, I'm going deep. By the time the ground thaws out and dries out deep, I probably should have planted my corn or soybeans a week or two before that. So I would have to delay planting to get the strip till done, and I really don't want to do that. And I'm not saying I might not do that for a couple of fields, but I don't want to do that on all our acres. So in the spring, a lot of times we're talking a lot more about coulters. In the fall, you can do a coulter or you can do a shank. in our case. But again, that's because we are cold and our soil is typically very wet. We've got feet of snow over the top of it right now. So to think that we're going to be able to get out there in early April with a deep strip-till application, going to be awful tough. The other things that I wanted to talk about real quick is I mentioned earlier some of the advantages we had to strip-till, like deep placement of fertility, having no compaction down to where we place that fertility, and having a warmer seed bed in the spring. So all those things are fantastic. Oh, and actually a pretty nice seed bed if you do it right. What I don't like is just that strip-tilling takes time, number one, and you have to have at least a halfway decent operator on there because where you're going to strip-till is typically where you're going to plant to follow that up, either this spring or if you were strip-tilling in the fall, you're going to plant it in the spring in those strips. But I'm just trying to say, you've got to do a good job. Especially when you're going deep, you're not going to be able to go super fast, cover a crazy amount of acres in a really short time. And also, if you're putting a fair amount of fertility out there, you're going to have to stop for some of the fill-ups. So I'm just trying to say, it does take some time. The time factor is probably the biggest thing I don't like, but if that's the only trip you're making over that field, which it really is for us on the fertility side, you know, then, I mean, it's not bad. I'm just saying it's something that is certainly different than if, let's say, you've just been running out there with broadcast fertilizer or having somebody else apply the broadcast fertilizer, and then you're going out doing full-scale tillage.
All right, lots to talk about with strip tillage, and we've got questions pouring in. I just would say this, too. We've got our phone lines open at 844-442-4743. That's 844-44-AG-PHD. We've got our radio email box open as well, radio@agphd.com, and you can find us on Twitter.
How your email box is going to be open. You can send us an email.
I just mean I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the email right now is what I'm saying.
Okay. Hey, one last thing I was just going to throw out there. You can be successful farming with whatever tillage system you have, whether it's conventional, whether it's strip-till, whether it's no-till. There are just different advantages and disadvantages to each one. So today we've spent a lot of time talking about strip-till. We're more than happy to talk about no-till or conventional till. We've done all of them over the years. And again, they all can work. It's just they've all got different advantages and disadvantages.
Get back to more of that discussion right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about strip till. We've got Jason with us right now. He farms in Indiana. Jason, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, Aaron. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. We're doing 30-inch strip till here, but I think you're doing a little narrower row space. Are you doing 20s?
We used to do 20s. We got out of 20-inch. We're back on 30-inch.
What was your reason for switching, just out of curiosity?
Everything. We struggled with 20 inch in regards to every operation that we were trying to get accomplished out in the field. Excuse me. One of the main factors was we were growing seed corn, and we just had so many passes through the field with
sure.
multiple planting passes, sprayers, application, people, and we just struggled with it. From an operation standpoint,
you know, the seed corn guys see so many different farmers and so many different fields. Do they like your strip till? And if so, what do they like about it?
I guess I can't answer that totally. Can't speak for them. One thing that we are seeing is our soil structure is improving, and with seed corn, operations have to happen when they need to happen, and sometimes that's not always the best field conditions, whether it's right after a rain or something like that. And so in that situation, it seems like we can get out in our fields and do tassel or harvest and not really rut stuff up. We've got a better soil structure.
More forgiveness, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, that is a real key. And I know we get comments about that too on our farm about how that soil structure is, and I think you're right on the money. That is kind of a big part of it. How'd you turn out last fall, and did you get the strip till done? Are you going to try and do some stuff in the spring?
Most of our strip tilling is done in the spring. Every fall, we need to get a lot of strip tilling done, and every fall we get nothing accomplished. It seems like harvest just seems to take over for us.
Yeah, I would say we always overcommit to fall, too. We got so many jobs we want to do in the fall, and it just doesn't always happen.
Yeah. Fortunately, our soils around here are light enough and forgiving enough that we can go in the spring and get done what we need to get done.
Yeah, that's a real key, and I think we've got some really heavy stuff that I don't think we'll strip till in the spring, but our lighter or medium kind of soils, generally we can get into that type of ground, so I know that can make a difference. Do you do most of your fertility work with the strip till, or do you do a lot of stuff separately?
Most of it's with the strip till machine. Some of our really light soils, like 3 to 5 CECs, we're still broadcasting some of our K and many nitrogen applications. But from a P and K standpoint and micronutrient standpoint, most of it is going on with the strip till machine.
Where you're at in Indiana, you mentioned broadcasting K on those really light soils. Do you find you get plenty of K movement out there that you don't have any issues? Or too much movement and it creates issues?
Yeah, so most of our production is irrigated. So we can go out post, and we like to top dress, maybe a little ammonium sulfate, some potassium, and we can just go out, turn the water on, and start to get it moved through. So on those soils, we fight too much leaching of potassium in those situations, and as well as nitrogen and sulfur.
Okay, yeah, that's one issue we don't have very much of, mainly because we're dry land, and it generally doesn't rain other than 2018 here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite the season for sure. How about micronutrients? Do you do micros at all in the strip?
Yes, and we never used to, but this last year we used a product from Midwest BioAg called TerraNew Ignite. It's a granulated manure, and they add nutrients to it. And this year we're switching over to their MicroPack product, which is a blend of micronutrients, sulfate-based, that are blended with this manure, and we're going to mix that in with our strip blend.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of different products out there and a lot of different ways guys are trying to accomplish the same thing or to take yields forward. With your rotation, do you end up strip tilling into corn stalks, or are you mostly following soybeans, or do you do the whole farm that way?
We kind of do the whole farm. So when we're stripping into corn stalks, we move over 15 inches. It just seems to be the easiest thing for us to do.
Sure. Sure. One last question for you, Jason, because I always ask this this spring anyway. What's the crop mix look like for guys in your area? Is there going to be more corn? Are guys kind of staying with the rotation or something different?
That's a good question. For us on our farm, we're still working on our crop plan. It seems like it's kind of lingered on a little bit. Harvest was so late around here, and guys kind of had a bad taste in their mouth about the fall and harvest, and it's just taken longer, at least for us too, to just put together a solid crop plan. We're still waiting on some seed corn acres and some other and our seed bean acres to see where we're going to end up. But I don't know. I suppose guys just kind of stick around whatever the rotation and maybe 10% fluctuation here and there, either side of that.
Yeah, a lot of undecided guys this year, whether it's because they're under snow, still have harvest to go, still have 2018 to clean up from or whatnot. So, yeah, always interesting. Right. Well, Jason, good luck here going into the spring, and thanks very much for sharing with us today.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Brian, we've got a number of questions in here for the Ag PhD mailbag. Let's dive into those.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Got a question from Jonathan. He said, we're side dressing our cotton fields with 32% nitrogen using Y drops. Wondering if I'm going to need a stabilizer, and if so, what to look for. Our CEC is in the 4 to 12 range, and we're also hearing products that claim we can cut our nitrogen rate by a certain percentage if we use these certain products out there. There's several of them out on the market.
What do you mean by products? You mean stabilizers?
No, just liquid, low rate, put them on late products, and they'll 1 gallon will have the power of 5 gallons or something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that might be pushing it. But, I mean, there are some products that may be a little bit more available, and certainly you can apply them at different times to make them more available. So part of the challenge and what you just presented to me is you said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to lay something on the surface of the soil with Y drops. When is it going to rain is my question. Or when are you going to irrigate is my question. Here's where I'm going with this. There are three forms of nitrogen loss that we are concerned about. The first one is volatility. When you lay that nitrogen on the soil surface, you have some time, but you don't have lots of time. You have days, but not very many, before you're going to start losing some of that nitrogen. Most people will say a couple days, you're pretty safe. So if you're going to get rain or put irrigation on in the first couple days, then your volatility risk is very small. If you say, well, I don't know when it's going to rain, well, then I might want some volatility protection, and then a nitrogen stabilizer would not be a bad idea. The other two forms of loss are denitrification, which I'm not too worried about in your light soil. I'm much more concerned about that in a heavy soil, though. The big one for you, most likely in light soil, is going to be leaching. So if you're putting lots of nitrogen on, this is a big concern. If you're putting 30 pounds on, this isn't much of a concern at all. So you have to weigh all these things and say, all right, do I really have risk here or do I not? So what I'm looking at is if it's going to lay on the surface of the soil for a long time, I get a lot of volatility risk. If I'm going to put on a big dose of nitrogen, then I've got a lot of leaching risk. Oh, yeah, and as far as any other products you can add, I would just say there are some good ones, but I'm not going to run through an entire list here of things. Just talk to some of your suppliers about that.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Jonathan. Got some feedback from Ryan in Wisconsin. He said, a strip till for 30-inch soybeans in Wisconsin, and strip till for soybeans has really changed the game for our farm. We planted soybeans as early as March 23rd and got really high yields. But strip tills also allowed us to plant soybeans first, or at least at the same time as when we're planting our corn. In the last 3 years, we've been planting soybeans on average around April 25th. We're fall strip tilling with the shank, and it's kind of difficult if we have wet soils and lots of residue in the fall. Last fall was a really small window to get those strips done, but planting beans into the strip in the spring's been amazing. Our populations are running 80 to 120,000. And we're kind of raising up that berm a little bit, and that makes harvest easier for us too.
Okay, so my biggest concern is if you've got crop insurance, just make sure you're not going out there earlier than the first crop insurance date if you want coverage. So if you don't care about that, that's a whole different story. If you're just doing a small trial, that's fine. But just be a little bit careful about that super early planting date.
We'll be right back after this.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's dual React control system. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
With the success of the Case IH Steiger Quad Track and Magnum Road Track tractors, it's no secret why Case IH is the leader of the track. So it wasn't surprising when the competition started imitating us, because Case IH offered the first five-axle design to give you more power to the ground with less burming and compaction, all to help you be more productive. Still, we're flattered. In fact, if we weren't already red, we'd be blushing. To learn more, visit caseih.com/tracks.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and we're answering your email questions right now during the Ag PhD mailbag time. Got one from Scott here. He said, I'm a training and educational specialist with a local farmers co-op. My job relies on involvement with social media, and I was curious. I saw that you had talked about U.S. average annual deaths at your workshops, and notice that some of the causes said worldwide data and Africa data and this kind of thing. I was just curious if you might explain where the research came from a little bit, because I'm highly interested in reading more about it.
Yep. Honestly, I don't even remember off the top of my head. This was something that I had put together about a year ago, and it's pretty, there's a lot of information. It's pretty readily available online. Yeah, there were only three things that I had that were worldwide. Well, two things I had that were worldwide.
Hippos?
One number that was in Africa. Yeah, so basically what it is, I concluded some meetings I did this winter by saying, all right, U.S. average annual deaths per year. And I started by listing the number one, which is motor vehicles. And I'm not talking about cancer or these other things, but number one thing was motor vehicles, 37,000. But then I go to some other kind of unique ones, like falling out of bed kills 450 people per year. Did you know that? In the United States alone. Ladders, 355 people die because of ladders in the United States. Bees kill about 100 people. Hot water kills about 100 people. Lightning strikes 50, dogs 34, icicles 15. And believe it or not, vending machines kill 2 people on average per year in the United States. I also said hippos kill about 2,900 people per year in Africa. Left-handers using right-handed tools, about 2,500 people worldwide. Champagne corks, 24 people worldwide. And here's why I'm bringing all this up. Because in the United States, pesticides kill about 23 people per year, but almost all are suicidal ingestions. And GMOs or biotechnology kill zero. 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 So everybody wants to blame GMOs and biotech and pesticides for all our ills. Yeah, I don't think so. What I put on there is, if you look at the average weight of a U.S. man in 1960, it was 166 pounds. By 2010, it was 196 pounds. That's a 30-pound increase. Or take that a step further, in terms of percentage, it's almost a 20% gain in weight. I mean, it's enormous. And for women, they weigh 26 pounds more on average in 2010 compared to 1960. And yes, both men and women are about an inch taller in 2010 versus 1960. But still, I mean, could it possibly be something else is causing some of our problems out there? Maybe because we're not eating right and exercising as much as we should. So anyway, I just bring this stuff up because as a farmer and as someone dealing in agriculture, I just get so tired of people blaming all their problems on us when they need to look in the mirror and say, all right, what can I do to prevent myself from getting ill or prevent myself from having health issues? Eat right and exercise. It's the same thing that, you know, you've heard your entire life. It's just, are we doing it or are we not? And pesticides, GMOs, biotechnology, I just struggle to see why people want to ban those things. I mean, why don't we say, let's ban beds. Let's start a movement to ban beds because, you know what, in the United States, there are 450 people that die every year because of beds. Okay, I mean, why don't we ban ladders? Or how about let's start banning dogs? Dogs kill 34 people per year in the United States. I mean, you can see how ridiculous all that sounds. Well, to me, that sounds just as ridiculous as saying we need to ban GMOs, biotechnology, and pesticides.
All right. Thanks for the question. We really appreciate that, Scott. Get one from Dick, and he's up in Michigan, and he's a subscriber to the Ag PhD Insider magazine. He said he'd love to see past issues available online. And he said, and one other thing, too, he said,
yep, we're going to have that.
He said in the November, December issue, you had a 2-page article on GMOs, and it kind of ties into your topic. He said, I'm wondering, would it be okay if I printed some of that out to hand out to my city friends and others who are opposed to GMOs?
I don't think I have any problem with that. Do you?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me one bit.
Was it my stuff?
Who
wrote
that? Yeah, you wrote that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if I wrote it, fine. If somebody else wrote it, then
we better ask them.
Right. But yeah, for me, yeah, I don't really care. That'd be great.
I don't know. Our dad just loves having these conversations with people that he runs into pretty much anywhere. So yeah, that's I get it. Sometimes it's nice to have something to talk about a little bit. Another question he said in the same issue, you were talking about compaction and zone building and deep tillage and this kind of thing. We've had a wet year. We normally do some deep tillage, but we got a lot of ruts and we need to do some tillage to clean that up. What do you recommend that we try to do to fix those rutted up and rough areas?
Yeah, there were a lot of problems from last fall. There's no one answer to this. It depends on how bad it is, how many acres we're talking about,
and what your field conditions are this spring.
What the depth is, right, what you can get done this spring, how dry and hot it turns out this spring. You pretty much know what the options are. Let's put it this way. If we've created some deeper compaction, at some point we're going to need to do some deeper tillage
Dick just mentioned that there's several people in their operation. They've all got their own ideas of what would be the best thing. And you know what? All might be right in a different situation out on your farm. So
you're going to have to just see how the weather turns out and then make your decision.
But
here's
one other thing. Going into this spring, when we are fixing some of those areas, I think it's neat to keep track of where the areas are. Maybe it's an area where you need some drain tile.
You're not going to have to keep track of them.
No, hear me out, Brian. But maybe you need to put some drain tile in those areas. The other thing is, right where those specific ruts are, go back out in the middle of the summer and do some digging and just see, all right, did I actually clean it up or did I just cover it up?
I can almost tell you didn't clean it up.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of farmers that say, I know I'm just covering it up,
right,
but I'm just not going to have time, and I'm hoping that next fall I can actually clean it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm glad you brought up drain tile, but let's also take a look at what's your soil composition. Do you have too much magnesium? Do you have not enough calcium? Do you have excess sodium? What are your soil problems there? Maybe it's not just a drainage issue. It's something else. Or maybe it's not just we just had bad luck and had excess rainfall in the fall. Well, maybe you can make that situation better for the future if this happens again.
Hey, thanks for the questions, Dick. And thanks for subscribing to the Ag PhD Insider Magazine. If you're hearing us talk about that a little bit and interested in that as well, just go to agphdinsider.com. The next question comes from Tony in South Central Minnesota, and it happens to be a magnesium question, Brian. He said, I've got a high pH soil, and I've got a magnesium imbalance. Some areas low, some areas are pretty good, maybe some are even a little high. He said, I did add 400 pounds of potash and up to 50 pounds of sulfur on a variable prescription out in this field after taking this test. And he said, I'm just kind of curious, what would be the best type of magnesium to fill in these spots that are 7 and 8% base saturation mag?
Well, usually the cheapest source that I can find if I have to put a bunch of pounds out there. So do you have, well, a lot of people will talk about K-Mag, for example, that gets you potassium and magnesium. There is dolomitic lime if you found something that was really high in magnesium. There are a number of sources out there. I would talk to a few fertilizer dealers and see what they can find for you. But here's one of the things that I want to bring up to you. Your ground, it appears, is really variable. Where I'm going with this is I've got two different points here. The first one is marked 5, the next one marked 6. Well, in number 5, you've got 15% magnesium. In number 6, you've got 6.5% magnesium. So where you have 6.5% magnesium, yeah, we're going to tell you, sure, I would probably add more magnesium there, but I don't want to put more magnesium where I already have 15. I don't know how big these grids or zones are. What I'm trying to say here is, if I've got a, let's call it a 10-acre grid that says 6.5, there might only be 5 acres out of that or 2 acres out of that that actually need magnesium. So before I spent a bunch of money on something, I would probably just in that one zone where it's really low, I would go out and do 1-acre grids. And I know you're going to say, oh, 1-acre grids, I can't afford that or anything else. Yes, you can, especially when it's just in one area of the field. But do that and then put the magnesium where you actually need it.
Yeah, magnesium's unfortunately on our farm, Brian, we only had out of, I don't know, over a couple thousand grid points. We only had a few grid points where we were going to need to add some magnesium. And a lot of times the next point over was high. So who knows how accurate that was or if we could just do something else to spread things out. But yeah, very, very interesting question. Thanks for sending that in. I want to say thanks to everybody who sent in questions or called in to today's program. We really appreciate that as well. And thanks to you for listening today. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.